Welcome to this week's episode of the Photo Detective Podcast. I'm Maureen Taylor, the Photo Detective. I'm beyond thrilled to let you know that my book, Family Photo Detective, has been updated and re-released for 2023. In fact, it's been out of print for a number of years, so I am pretty excited about having it back in print. My book is the easiest way to unlock the secrets behind your family photos by helping figure out key elements and how you can identify more about your family through pictures. You can find it on my website at MaureenTaylor.com. It's right on the front page, so you can't miss it. And it's available in both ebook and print formats. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them. From the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums, to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. My guests today are Steve Little and Mark Thompson. They're back for round two of your family research and AI. Only right now we're going to really dig deep into photos and AI. Mark is a professional genealogist, an ex-IT professional, and a photo enthusiast. And Steve is the AI program director at NGS and teaches a fantastic intro course and part two intro course. We're going to dig deep into what all this AI stuff means for you and your family photographs. And this is obviously something as the photo detective that I am watching quite carefully. So what can you do and what can't you do with AI and who's using AI?
If I could start, I would start by when this became a real issue for genealogists with regards to photos. Just a little bit of brief history. In 2011, they made real breakthroughs on how a computer could analyze an image. And it was in 2011 that researchers trained a computer to recognize a picture of a cat. And in the years since 2011, it's just been photo analysis has gotten better and better. But last March, in March of 2023, the company OpenAI, which is the firm behind GPT-4, the large language model that powers ChatGPT, announced that they were going to make available a tool that would analyze images. And as part of the demonstration that they displayed 14 months ago was a joke. They showed a picture of a cell phone with a funny contraption hooked up to it. It was a peripheral adapter from the 1980s. And they simply showed the image. So you had this modern phone and this old printer adapter from the 1980s attached to this modern phone. And they showed the image to ChatGPT and said, "What's funny about this?" And it answered. It said, "I see a cell phone, a modern cell phone, with an ancient adapter attached to it. And that's funny." That was stunning, that you could show a computer algorithm a visual joke and it could tell you what the joke was. And then a few months later, that was in March of 2020, that didn't become immediately available, but it did become available in May or June. And so for a few weeks, we could analyze images last year in the spring and summer, but they quickly shut it down because they realized the facial recognition was too good. facial recognition has the potential to be dangerous and misused and used for bad purposes. And so they withdrew access. Now, if you show it an image of a living person, it may hesitate to identify a living person. But when we could start analyzing images again last summer in July, I started taking snapshots of cemetery headstones. I could show it an image of a cemetery headstone, and it would extract the data from the headstone. I took a picture of Edgar Allan Poe's tombstone, and it extracted all the text from the tombstone in a formatted way. And it even read the text. There was a part of the tombstone at the top that was curved, in written in a half moon. And it read that curved text. Blaine Bettinger was one of the first people to discover that you could upload two images at the same time, and it would do a comparison between what's different between these two photographs. And so just since last summer, it's been off to the races. What can these things do to tell us about an image?
This is Mark here. As a photo historian, there's two categories that I look to these tools. And one of the categories I've been using for years and years and years. And the other category is the one that Steve just talked about. So the first category is helping me look at, organize, and process collections of photos, like saving time with an arduous, repetitive task of looking at hundreds and thousands of photos, right? And sometimes hundreds of thousands, but hundreds and thousands of photos. And the other one is helping me look very deeply at an individual photo. And the second one that Steve just talked about, like helping me look at an individual photo, has only been out in the post-GPT era. Like that's a very, particularly for consumers, stuff's been around in the back room for a long time to do that. But to look at an individual photo, that's a very new capability for a consumer to get access to. The other one, helping me process thousands of photos, that really first hit the masses about 4 or 5 years ago. And whether you're a photo enthusiast or a photo archivist, if you deal with hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of photos, you are painfully familiar with the arduous task of tagging photos. It's an arduous task, but it's a task that pays off. But because if you go and you individually say, this photo is from Virginia Beach, that photo is from Victoria, this one contains Aunt Tilly, this one contains Uncle Fred. If you go through that task and you take the time to do that, it pays off in spades down the road as the family genealogist or the family archivist when somebody says, find me a picture of Aunt Tilly in Virginia Beach. The number of phone calls I've gotten from relatives where they go, it's a funeral, it's a wedding, it's a birthday, find me the pictures of Aunt Tilly, especially if they're in Virginia Beach. Everybody's got those photos. I'm the only one that can find them, because I've actually gone through and tagged them. I've spent the literal 1,000 hours tagging, probably more than 1,000 hours tagging photos. 4 or 5 years ago, the ability to automatically to be able to identify photos using artificial intelligence and connect them together, the same person that's in those photos, emerged on the consumer market. That changed my life. when I would work with a client, or I would work on a collection of photos that some relative gave to me, because I am in the enviable and painful position of being the family archivist as well. You'd get those 500 photos. You'd have to go through and tag them all. That's so much work when you're doing a big collection. But when you can say, show me all the pictures of all of the faces that are the same face, likely the same face, I took projects that used to take tens of hours down to tens of minutes. Right. It's an amazing game-changing capability that's now built into, I use Adobe Lightroom like many big photo, like professional photo folks do, or serious photo enthusiasts do. But that same capability is now built into Google, like Google Photos, Amazon Photos, to a lesser extent, Facebook, but all of the big platform places that you can actually store and upload your photos now have some, even Apple Photos has the capability for doing that at a level, but Lightroom and the ability to quickly tag the same people, apparently the same people, probably the same people. You still have to use your own eyeballs, but to quickly group them together in likely to around the same person likely changed everything for me. That has saved me so much more time than the individual photo analysis does. it really helps with that too. And that's a whole other topic that Steve covered very, very well. But that other one, collection management, game changer. And that's been around for 5 years. And it's only getting better because the AI is getting better.
And as far as analysis goes, from my perspective right now, the observational capabilities of something like ChatGPT is great, because mm-hmm. my clients always say, oh, I didn't notice she was wearing a necklace.
Yeah.
Or I didn't notice that car in the background, because you're so focused on that one detail yeah. that you want to be yeah. the thing that's going to identify yeah. the photo. That's good.
Yep. Yeah. It takes a lot of time. Like the people who've been doing photo analysis for decades, right? It takes a lot of time to train your eye. Exactly. I put you in that club. Don't worry. But the people who've been doing photo analysis for a long time, they forget how long it took before they could see all the stuff in a picture. Like, I'm always amazed when I take a photo and I show somebody the difference between what I see and what they see, right? It takes years to train your eyes to find those clues that are relevant to your research. And for the people who are either early in their photo analysis career, or the people who are just looking to make sure that they don't miss anything, because they're already experienced, but they're just trying to go faster, right? Because there's a help you do the things you already know how to do category that is so important in photo analysis. I see a lot of stuff. Still, when I take a photo, like a photo that's rich with clues, I am amazed at how often now that when I use AI, ChatGPT-4 in particular, to analyze a photo and tell me what it sees with a very well thought out prompt, I go, oh, I have looked at that photo. I will sometimes look at a photo for 10 hours, Mark, stare at it, find clues, and I miss stuff.
Mark, can I tell them your wonderful example you did?
Oh, sure, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In the class on using AI for photos, Mark gave a wonderful example. He had a photo, one of his family photos from 100 years ago, plus or minus, a half dozen ladies, well-dressed, and he had analyzed the photo many times himself, but he asked the AI to look at it. And it did a very good job, and it noticed a lot of the things that Mark had previously noticed. But one of the things that it had done new, the AI, when it looked at this image, it noticed that one of the women had sheet music in her lap, which was very significant and meaningful. And Mark, tell them what you inferred from the sheet music that the AI saw in your ancestor's lap.
Yeah, so this was six women arranged in a very obviously a distinguished set of poses in a studio, and I know from the family history that it's an affluent, like socialite level a group of women, and so this sheet music laid across the lap, the historical and cultural significance was that it was meant to show that they were women of means. Who were of such great means that they were women of leisure, and this was a prop intended to show that they were women of leisure, right? So this prop, and I missed it. Like I missed not only did I miss actually identifying it; it just looked like a piece of paper, right? Like when I scanned it, because I was looking at ruffles and I was looking at dresses and I was looking at set design and lighting, all of the other 20 things I was looking at, I missed the cultural significance of this piece of paper, both what it was and what it meant. And I was like, that's amazing that I missed a piece that was so important, and it caught it. And it caught the cultural significance. It said, this likely means dot, dot, dot.
Right. But can it identify the actual sheet music?
No.
Not yet.
No.
And I couch that with not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. But, you know, from my perspective, so much of photo history is unwritten, unresearched.
Yeah.
So ChatGPT, as I mentioned, is great for observing things like that. But the nuances of a photo, maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, it did say that for your photo. But how do you know those women are wearing current dresses? How do you know the hats are current? How do you know all this stuff? You know, how does that all influence it? It doesn't really get there yet. Do I think it's going to get there? I think yes. I think yes.
I put this in the same bucket as any other genealogy research. Every clue that you get is a clue that deserves follow-up research, reasonably exhaustive comparisons with other facts that you find to come to a conclusion. And that's why I think AI is just one more amazing tool, new tool in the genealogist toolkit, but it should be treated like any other clue, and what you learn from it should be put into your research log like anything else and analyzed, confirmed before you come to a conclusion. The conclusions are always the genealogist to make. The clues can come from a whole variety of sources.
Right, right. Obviously. Yeah, you have to prove it.
Got to prove
it. Whatever you find, you have to prove it. Is that the truth, or is that the truth from another source? So you really have to learn that critical skill. It's important to genealogy to learn that critical skill.
One of my favorite tag along prompts when I'm building a prompt to give to an AI tool for analyzing a photo is to ask it to identify inconsistencies in what it sees, not just to list the 10 things that it sees, but to, in the context of genealogical research, do some of the things that you see not fit together? Like, does the color of the color of the photo match the frame? Does the dress style of person number one match the dress style of person number two? Because we all know as genealogists, those inconsistencies need to be resolved before you can come to a conclusion. And you've got to follow up with them all. But that's a really That's an interesting, I don't want it to come to the conclusion for me. I want it to give me the clues that I can use to help me come to a good conclusion more quickly than I might on my own.
I can tell you, one of the frustrating things I'm experiencing these days is, you know, people come to me and they have a photograph and I analyze it and I do the whole thing that I do, you know that, Mark. And and they'll say, really? I'm like, yeah, this is true. This is really true.
Yeah, really.
But they run it through, you know, an AI thing. And it's like, okay, it must be true. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. All right. I have all these years of experience. I have hundreds of books and resources and, you know, whatever, but that's the way it goes. But it's actually pretty funny when you think about it.
Well, it's just another tool. A lot of people who aren't carpenters think that all of the corners in their houses are 90 degrees.
I know. It's the same thing.
Just because somebody used a tool to make it doesn't mean that that's a 90-degree corner. Just ask somebody who owns an old house. They are somewhere between 70 and 110.
Right, right. Yeah, MyHeritage, of course, is one of the leading companies that's involved in this. They have the create an AI biography with a consistency checker, which prints out a nice little report for you or gives you a PDF report about what's wrong with your research and your tree and everything else. And it gives you some biographical information and historical context. It's pretty cool. I really like it because it points out those things. But they also have the photo data tool, which I kudos to MyHeritage on having the photo data tool. But there are issues with the photo data tool that nobody wants to talk about. I actually just made a little video that I don't know if it'll be out by the time this is out, but it's here's where it works and here's where it doesn't. And I worry that, and you guys can tell me this because you got the background. If 1,000 people go in and they upload a photograph to the photo data, and it says right on there, estimated date. And they just say, oh, that must be the date. And they click it, right? Does that change the algorithm?
I will say depends. Before I beat up on photo data for a second, because I would love
to. I am going to beat up on it. Yeah.
MyHeritage has done a tremendous job. I would say the whole artificial intelligence space fits on, all of the tools fit on a continuum right now.
Yeah.
Maximum simplicity so that the most people can use them the most easily. And photo data is as far on that side of the continuum as you can get. It's like, upload photo, click, go. It's awesome.
It is awesome.
It's awesome. And the other end is, if you're not an IT professional, not only can you not figure out how to use, not only can you not figure out what it's telling you, you probably can't even use it because you actually have to be a coder just to make that tool go, right?
Which one?
So there's a
photo data.
of photo.
Well, yeah, photo data, maximum simplicity. The other end, you know, data analysis using Python enabled, you know, superpowers. Like there's a, and there's a range in there. And everybody lives somewhere along that continuum. And MyHeritage has done a great job of being, making all of the AI tools single click go, single purpose. It's like, I got an app for that. It's like the early days of the iPhone apps. It's like every app did a single thing well, and you didn't need to know. And it made that space totally take off. Right?
My only point is it says it a date. So you really need to click that to see how it came up with the
reason. How it came to that conclusion. Yeah.
And then prove, like, I have a photo that I uploaded specifically because I wanted to see what it would do with it. Obviously, I'm testing it all the time. Yep. And I know for a fact that the photograph was taken in the early 1890s, but it says it was taken in 1899. Vastly different if you've got a baby in the photo and you're trying to figure out who that is.
Yep.
And then when you click on the estimated date, right, you click on that little thing, it gives you that actually, that's an, that really is an estimate, because most of the algorithm thinks it's the early 1890s, but some of the algorithm thinks it's late. So they sort of merged them together and came up with that date.
Yeah. We're in this, like, these kinds of problems have existed with IT tool, all tools, actually, all tools, obviously, as long as there have been tools, right? So it's like the accountant who doesn't actually know how to do accounting, but actually knows how to run the accounting software. And they get an answer out and they go, well, the answer is $1,423. But if they knew the accounting better, they would know that that number made no sense. And so we run into the same place. And this is why in 2024, on April the 3rd, AI tools are best used to do things that you already know how to do. That is a, there's a lot of people, but there's a whole lot of people who use these tools and use them to come to conclusions that they wouldn't understand without the tool. And so they can't put up their own guardrails, their own, you know, fire off their own airbag,
right,
and go, that answer makes no sense because I understand what it's telling me and I know how to correlate it with other evidence that I have. Like all good genealogists are taught to do right from the get-go, from their first class, they get that pounded into them. Look at the preponderance of evidence and come to a conclusion. If you take a single piece of evidence from a single tool, whether it's AI or it's the census record that was that the enumerator was off the rocker when they wrote it. If you take a single fact to come to a conclusion, there's a fair chance you might make a mistake in the genealogy world. So don't do that.
Right. And my point is, it's only going to get better. The more people, the more photos, like there's things it doesn't do right now. Like it really works best with a full body image. It doesn't really work very well with a half body image. It doesn't really work when you just got a hat or a military uniform or a fraternal thing. There's a lot of, as I said, nuances in photo identification, as you know. Yep. So, but the algorithm could get better. The whole thing could get better.
Oh. And one of the reasons I was so excited to talk to you today is this whole, more generally, what we're talking about right now is talking about where these tools fail. What is a bridge too far? What can they not do today? We call those limits, and there's things these tools can do today, and there's things these tools cannot do today, and what they cannot do today we call a limit. But what's so exciting about this field is that it's advancing so quickly that when you have someone with your degree of expertise in this, if Maureen Taylor tells me that the tool cannot do something today, I take that to the bank and I write that down. And that is hugely important knowledge, because that's today's limit. But where that becomes really useful is if Maureen comes back and says next month or next year, oh, it can now do something that it couldn't do 6 months ago. That's what makes this so important. And that's why I've been excited to talk to people who are experts in their area of genealogy, is to find out where they identify the limits of these tools today, and watch how today's limits become tomorrow's breakthroughs.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting, because this technology is advancing quickly enough my primary concerns is fossilization, that people will, they'll learn a lesson and they'll overlearn it. And they'll think that just because this tool can't do something today, they're going to think that it can't do it in 3 months or 3 years. And your people need to stay flexible, and they need to check in with Maureen every, you know, frequently, and find out how she's using these tools and what she says the limits are for, you know, this quarter, and pay attention to that. That tells us where you can also kind of then anticipate where the next breakthrough might happen.
I can see, I mean, I can't physically see
the
future. Yeah, but I can intuit the future of these tools. Yes. I'm sure you can too, Mark.
Yes.
Like, yes, that's exactly the qualification. Just because it can't do it today doesn't mean it won't be able to do it in a month or 2 months or 3 months. But right now, it's got some issues. But that doesn't mean those issues are always going to be there. I mean, think about image improvement, right? That's same thing. There are glitches with the image improvement. I interviewed Scan My Photos, Mitch Goldstone, and he's incorporated AI into image calibration when he's scanning stuff. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah. So I'm not beating on MyHeritage, Mark. I love MyHeritage all the time. I am, however, beating on the tool all the time to see what's new and have they fixed the problems that I encountered the last time I used it, which, you know, probably not happy with me for that.
And that's what's going to distinguish the market. Yeah. That's what's going to distinguish the market in the next 5 years, right? Is that some companies will take those lessons, like they're building into their development process, speaking as a retired IT executive, they're building into their development process the changing. Like they know that the world is going to change every day. The people who think that the world is shaped exactly like today and they build their tools stable on everything that they know today, they are not going to be here in 2 years. Because the other companies that are going like, we know it's going to change, so we're going to build our teams and our people and our development processes and how we get feedback from our users. We're going to bake that into how we build stuff. And we're going to release new software monthly, you know, weekly, quarterly, based upon what we learn from how this stuff is used and how well it is used. And in 3 years, those people are still going to be here.
Yeah. Well, this is a call out to MyHeritage. Use the power of your database and create a database of all the photographers in the world. Got the records. We could
use the records. That. Yeah.
But let's talk about image creation and AI. There was just an article in Today, this is April 3rd, New York Times, about Legos and the way that they've been using AI images to advertise some of their products. And some of their products, because it's created with obviously something like DALL-E, you know, the figures have an extra finger and stuff like that. So customers are all up in arms about it. Plus, they can tell that it's AI because right now AI images are pretty distinctive, right? They have vivid colors and sharp edges and, you know, things like that. I will say that just recently I interviewed a food photographer, Andrew Scrivini, who I thought we were going to talk about food photography. And we ended up talking about the fact that Adobe has this thing called that they spearheaded called CAI, which is the Content Authenticity Initiative, which was very cool to actually help us, because his point, and I think all of our points because we do images, Mark, is eventually the average person will no longer see that it's an AI image, that your eyes will become used to it and it will no longer look distinctive.
It's if you play the calendar back 20 or 25 years, it's easy to remember the days before Photoshop. Like we had scanning, but we had entirely rudimentary editing. And eventually the editing got to the point where it was so good that the average consumer not only couldn't distinguish between an edited image and an unedited image, they came to prefer the characteristics of a highly edited image. Like I look at some images and I go, this is almost a cartoon, like in Photoshop, almost a cartoon. Bright, saturated colors, whites of eyes that look like somebody poured bleach in their eyes. Like no human looks like that. But we have looked at so many of them that we think that's the normal now. And but qualified and educated eye can see that can distinguish between those edited images and unedited images. The same thing's going to happen with AI. Today, everybody can see, almost everybody can see an AI image, right? Some people don't want to see it. They just want to see what it represents. But that's right. That's a story for a different podcast. Right. Most people can actually distinguish an AI image. And some of them, it's because, you know, I got nine fingers and 14 toes and, you know, a third eye. And sometimes it's just the colors. Like we have come to see that there's a style, the style of the shape of the face, the color palette, all of those sorts of things, they pop out to the experienced eye. Those are getting better and better. The people who are tuning those image generation models, they're getting better at building in style refining tools to make it look in a particular style. And one of those styles is photorealism, right? And that's yeah. right down to being able to say, what size of lens took this photo, right? So you can get the fall off correct with the focus. So you can get the shape of the face right for somebody who has taken who had their picture taken with that shape of lens. Like the things that have to be included to trick your eye into seeing photorealistic, they are working so hard at doing that because they know it costs a lot of money to get somebody out to take a picture. And like a model in a place at a time, with the lighting and all that kind of stuff, it can cost thousands of dollars to get a single image. And if they can get it down to $100, right, in computing power, they can make a ton of money, right?
Right. They don't have to really hire a professional photographer, and they don't have to hire
a model.
They don't have to model. And that's everything that we were talking about.
They don't have to go to that beach in Tahiti and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like those, some single images cost tens of thousands of dollars to capture. And if they can get it down to $100, it's worth the investment. And we're going to get there.
One of the issues that more generally this makes me think about and be concerned about, it relates not just to images, but anything that an AI can generate. Text, audio, video, images. The internet is changing. 20 years from now, I suspect, and I would place a $5 bet on this for 20 years from now, that they're going to demarcate that there was before 2023 and after 2023, that we are about to experience a tsunami of AI-generated content that is going to be almost impossible for humans to detect on their own. You've both mentioned that today it's fairly easy to identify an AI-generated image and AI-generated text in the hands of an amateur or a beginner. A skilled person can create something that can fool people now, but that's just going to get better and better. And so from this point forward, from 2023 forward, it's going to be hard to know what's real and what's not. And so one of the most important pieces of metadata associated with any document, record, image, audio, or video is going to be the created date, the modified date, or the ascension date, the date in a catalog. When did this digital image enter the catalog of Ancestry.com or FamilyTree DNA or MyHeritage? And anything that entered the collection after 2023 is going to be really suspect. You know, how do you know that something created after 2023 is it has an actual counterpart in the real world?
The first time I saw one of you two, can remind me of the actual tool name that my heritage is, make myself look like Genghis Khan. The first time I saw that, my person went, that is so cool. My photo historian went, oh my God, it's all over. Right? When I pull up a photo that's on heavy cardstock, that's got that sepia color shift, I look at it and I go, this is the photo that I think it is. Right? Well, when I did my thing with AI Time Machine, I went to town on it. I wanted to try to create the best images I could. I uploaded like 40 images, profile, you know, lit left, lit right, lit underneath, full body. Like I wanted to build essentially the best possible representation of Mark Thompson-ness I could so that it would have the best chance. I look at some of those photos and I go, somebody who didn't know that they were looking at an AI photo would go, oh yeah, this might actually be an old relative of Mark's. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is, future photo historians are going to lose their minds over the problem that Steve just identified. Like, we need, as a community, we need some form of standard for getting not just the date metadata, but this was an AI-generated thingy metadata, like both on the image and in the image and the metadata, so that future photo historians have a snowball's chance in hell of being able to distinguish this faker one from this, like, photoshopping is bad enough, but completely false is a nightmare.
Well, enter CAI.
Yeah, exactly.
That's enter what they're CAI. Doing. I mean, yeah. They're all about watching, Steve, not just when it was uploaded, but I would like to see how many people added that photo to their tree and who they think it is, right? That's all content modification. But yep. Mark, I will tell you, there's nothing new in this sort of photo fake business. I attended a lecture at the Daguerrean Society conference a few years ago, and I was stunned to to hear the examples that this antique dealer came up with and the lengths at which these photo fraudsters would go to create so-called historical images for money, like faking daguerreotypes, buying the paper, the inks. I was like, are you kidding me? Who would take the time to do this? And yet people do it. So this is just a new version of that, I think, but a scarier version.
Like, I mean, like, I guess, not that I agree with it, of course, but if somebody's going to sell a daguerreotype of Lincoln, right? Like, there's money in it, right? Like, there's money in it. So I can see why somebody would go to the lengths of it, but somebody's going to accidentally create a, like, we all know the problem of, like, never write the piece of information on the back of the photo if you aren't exactly 100% sure, because the future historian is going to take it as fact, right? Oh, sorry, the future family, you know, family hobbyist genealogist is going to take it as fact. So somebody's going to horse around making that photo that looks like somebody at a time and a place, and they are accidentally giving future clues, future completely false clues to future family historians.
Steve, let's wrap this up. What do you think? What's coming?
What's coming? Probably a few things we can anticipate and more that we can't. Just as shocked as I was 14 months ago to see that demonstration of how ChatGPT could find the joke in an image, the things we see coming, one that I anticipate, handwriting recognition is vaguely, you know, it's image based. That's one we've been hoping for 20 years, seems to be inching closer and closer. The related to photography, the one that I'm a little bit more concerned about, or again, related to some of these issues, photo enhancement and how easy it is to take a fuzzy photo and make it crystal, just pack sharp. But knowing whether or not that's been done, you know, MyHeritage has their enhance and it will sharpen up and, you know, that's being built into Photoshop and all the others too. So earlier we talked about Mark's example of the sheet music on the lady's lap. You know, you might be able to sharpen that image enough to where it might be able to identify what piece of music's on there. But knowing whether that's true or not, whether it has recreated what was actually on her lap or hallucinated a different piece of music, is going to be a tricky question. And why I think about ascension dates, and knowing when a photograph was last modified and when a photograph entered somebody's collection. Those are the things that I'm thinking about.
I am always very careful when I'm working on somebody's photo collection to keep the original digital copy. It's like the old days of keeping the negative. Even though you've got the photo, you got to keep the negative. And in the digitization world, it's that original TIFF or that original RAW file out of your camera. Even though you might take it and crop it and, you know, when you're going to use it at the family reunion, you might actually improve the contrast a little bit or something like that. You got to keep that original, because when somebody asks the research question, you've got to know what that original color was. You've got to know what that, were those eyes the shape they were? Did they actually have those eyebrows? You know, was that mole important? Like, you can't take that stuff out when you're doing actual family history research. You got to go back to the source record, just like all of genealogy. Always have the source record. And the source record is either the photo itself or the original unperturbed digital copy of that photo. So you can go, I know what it looked like, not what it currently looks like.
Right. I prefer not to look at enhanced or colorized images.
Yeah.
The enhancement can change a person's face.
Yeah.
Right now. And I just prefer to see the original and do my own enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Play with all the tools.
For the purposes of research, not beautification. Yeah. Right.
Right.
I will take the contrast and crank it to Tuesday so that I can read what's in that, read what's on the, in the shadows on that sign in the back of the store. Right. But that's not beautification. That's using the software tools to see things that can't be seen with the human eye in the photo.
Yeah. But imagine when it gets better, right? Everything gets better. And it is all going to get better. It's all going to improve. But that sheet music, suppose that sheet music, when it's identified what it is actually incredibly significant, because it's like a school song and you know where these women went to school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, already today you can video creation's not quite as easy as image generation, but there's tools today. You can upload one image and it'll create a 20-second video clip. Well, it's not hard to imagine that it could read that sheet music and play that sheet music. What, it could create the soundtrack to make that video of that studio photography come alive with the music on the sheet music there.
Mark and Steve, thank you so much for joining me on The Photo Detective for part two, where we really dug in deep to what this means for your family photos. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maureen.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review. And if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.